Hey, it's Brian Cook, your host here. Wanted to let you know we now have t-shirts. Would you like to support the podcast? Have you noticed that I can't get a sponsor because this show's too filthy? Hey, it'd be great if some people ordered shirts. They're great looking shirts. Go to estoymerchandise.com, E-S-T-O-Y merchandise.com. You'll find competitive erotic fanfiction on the right hand side. Click on that and you can order shirts. There's men's and women's sizes. It's a great design by my buddy Mark Palm in Seattle. He does all of our amazing poster art. Please support the podcast. It would help us out a ton. That's estoymerchandise.com. E-S-T-O-Y merchandise.com.
Now entering nerdist.com.
Hello and welcome to episode 138 of the Competitive Erotic Fanfiction Podcast. I'm your host, Brian Cook, and you've found the internet's number one most trusted source for Muppet boners and horny loners. Got some upcoming shows. Some of these are stand-up. September 3rd, I'm headlining the Comedy Underground in Seattle, Washington. September 8th, Competitive Erotic Fanfiction at the Capital City Theater in Salem, Oregon. September 9th, Competitive Erotic Fanfiction at Helium in Portland, Oregon. September 27th, Fanfic at Tacoma Comedy Club, Tacoma, Washington. October 25th, Fanfic at Union Hall in Brooklyn. Look out for Philly and DC shows. Still have to book those. Today's show was recorded August 25th, 2014 at the Capital City Theater in Salem, Oregon. And this is round one featuring Sean Jordan, Bentley Michaels, AJ Marquez, and Jesse Priest reading pieces they wrote in advance based upon topics of their choosing. Enjoy.
And give it up for your first round one comic who has brought a prepared piece, Bentley Michaels. Interior, big Hollywood office. Jean-Claude Van Damme walks into the room as Sylvester Stallone sits behind a fat cat desk, going over paperwork.
Yo, Jean-Claude, great to see you, buddy. Yo, have a seat.
Thank you. It's great to be here, Sly. Christy, the secretary, then speaks up with an offer for the aging action stars. Do you boys need anything to drink? No, I'm fine. Thank you very much, Christy.
No, Christy, just for privacy, thanks.
All right, you boys play nice. Christy shuts the door to leave these two titans of the big screen to discuss business.
Yo, I'm so happy you decided to play the villain in The Expendables 2. My secretary told me you had some thoughts on the script for your character.
As you know, I haven't really played a villain since No Retreat, No Surrender. Sure, there was Edward Garrett, the serial killer in my movie Replicant. But I also played the good guy in that film. This time, I really want to sink my teeth into the part.
Yo, it's a meaty part.
Exactly. So, the name of my character.
Yes, I call Steven.
Right. It's too on the nose for me. I think it should be something more subtle, something that will really let the audience know who I am and what I am about.
Yo, Christy, put on a pot of coffee. We're gonna have to be here all night.
I think we're going to need something a bit stronger.
I've got a great bottle of Macallan's single malt scotch.
Now we're talking. A montage begins of the guys drinking and writing, while a catchy tune plays in the background that perfectly explains what is happening on screen. Writing is hard unless you got the stuff. Let's start a rough draft. Thinking is hard and words are tough. They're the masters of their craft.
Yo, so Leon. Leon bad guy?
He's French.
That's fucking crazy.
You're fucking crazy. Never fight with the person you're riding with, or else your night will never end.
Yo, I'm sorry. This villain's name is just so fucking frustrating.
What did you say?
I said this villain's name.
That's it. his last name will be Villon.
Yo, but we need a first.
See what happens when you take your time and work as a team. See what happens when you work real hard and live your dream. Symbol swish and cross dissolve to show Stallone and Van Damme thoroughly drunk congratulating each other.
Well, we did it. It took 4 hours and a bottle of my finest, but we did it.
And it was so simple. His name was Jean Villon, because I am Jean, and he is a villain.
It was at this moment that Sylvester Stallone realized that the man in front of him was no longer a box office foe, but a real-life friend, and he had to have him.
Hey, Jean, you know, I gotta say, it brought me great pleasure working on this script with you.
Look, are you going to keep using euphemisms? Or are you going to show me why they called you the Italian Stallion?
And with that, Jean-Claude Van Damme jumped onto Stallone's desk into one of his famous splits and raised an eyebrow. Sly Stallone was taken aback by Van Damme's eagerness, but then he remembered something. Van Damme was European, and they thought differently about sex. Van Damme slowly lifted his... Van Damme slowly lifted his own shirt off while still in the splits, and Stallone did the same. They both briefly paused to admire each other's stunning physiques when they both had a realization at the same time and began to chuckle. They had both started to sweat with nervousness and looked every bit of the greased-up action stars that they were. Then, without any hesitation, they attacked each other in passion. Stallone pounced on Jean-Claude, knocking him out of his splits, and whispered into his ear as he picked him up from the desk.
I'm going to show you the Demolition Man tonight.
Van Damme gently touched his feet to the ground and said,
I hear that's when you smack your dick against the desk until you lose your erection. And I have to resuscitate it.
Stallone began taking the rest of his clothes off and murmured,
yeah, you were correctly.
Stallone began the Demolition Man while Van Damme stripped down to nothing and watched. Soon the two men were entangled and taking part of all sorts of action sex moves. The Rocky. Stallone was giddy as he rode Jean-Claude around his office like a pony with his finger in his asshole yelling,
yo, yee-haw, you know.
Van Damme quickly flipped Stallone over and started the cyborg, a mechanical move in which Van Damme puppeted a very frigid Stallone around the room, asking where the cure was. The double impact was next on the docket. This move involved both parties punching each other in the balls, and whomever topples over first onto the other one's cock loses. Or wins, depending on how you look at it. They followed that up with the Under Siege, which is simply shitting on a picture of Steven Seagal, lighting it on fire, and playing hot potato with one hand while using the other hand to jerk your partner off. Stallone tried to do the Rambo 3, but Van Damme chided him by saying,
remember, I can crack walnuts with my butt cheeks.
Then, just as things were reaching a climax, they both shouted out, stop or my dick will shoot! Now, I don't know if you've ever been privy to an action star orgasm, but these two giants of the screen, it sounded something like this. And just as suddenly as it had begun 4 hours ago, it stopped. A soft light was shining through Stallone's office window. It was morning. They had worked hard all through the night. The men were putting their clothes on when a soft knock was heard on the door and it opened. It was Christy, the secretary, wearing the same clothes she had been wearing from the previous day. She said,
Well, boys, did you get everything sorted out?
Oh, yeah, we did. You know, thank you for saying everything.
Stallone was turning red, not from the passion this time, but embarrassment. How much had Christy heard?
You know, Christy, I think I will take that coffee you were talking about.
Christy nodded in acknowledgement and started to leave, but right as she was about to close the door, she poked her head back in.
Oh, and gentlemen.
Yeah, what's up?
Next time, I'd like to be a part of your meeting.
Cut to a wide shot of all three characters, Stallone laughing, Van Damme giving the A-OK, and Christy smiling and flirtatiously. Then, like the end of an 80s sitcom, they all froze. While the montage music started up again and fade to credits to The Zexpendables.
Bentley Michaels. And your next round one comic, AJ Marquez, ladies and gentlemen.
Decades ago, Max had come to Bartertown, a city that seemed like the result of a biker bar fucking a swap meet that ran on pig shit and dead dreams. Bartertown was ruled by Auntie, a woman once known as Tina Turner. She had long since given up her singing career in exchange for a bloody dictatorship over a city of thieves and murderers. Together, they ruled Bartertown unquestioned, till today. There was talk in the town that a stranger had showed up, claiming he was the real Mad Max. It was another former badass actor, Tom Hardy, with his robot-armed companion, Charlize Theron. There were few laws in Bartertown, but the ones they had were simple. If two men had a dispute, it was to be settled in the Thunderdome. Mad Mel knew he couldn't best Hardy Max in hand-to-hand combat, so he challenged him to a fuck-off. Mad Mel and Auntie versus Hardy Max and Theronbot in a race to see which couple could come first. The winners would get to retain the rights to the name Mad Max and rule Bartertown. The losers would be sent to the Outlands via direct-to-DVD and on-demand banishing. Let's meet our contenders. Here in the brown and gray corner, we have Mel Gibson, the Coca-Cola classic of Fast and Furious post-apocalyptic murderers, a man who, like high-end whiskey, seems to get better with age. If your measurement of better is worth more money and less palatable to minorities. Pairing with him, we have Tina Turner, a woman who nobody wanted to fuck when the apocalypse was fresh and new. Now one whole stripper life cycle older, but still the same bag of decades overripe fruit shoved into a feathered bikini. Now in the other brown and gray corner, we've got Tom Hardy, a man so perfectly ripped he looks like every bodybuilder right before they discovered steroids. A man who seemed like God didn't put him on this earth to smash pussy so much as to smash cars to bits with his bare hands, like in Street Fighter 2. His incredibly unfortunate partner for this contest is another of the favorites among flagrantly rich white people, Charlize Theron. To compensate for her nearly inhuman beauty, her arm was removed and replaced with a fucking robot arm. Even with her shaved head and what seems to be soot smeared on her face, she's still substantially hotter than just about anyone who's had enough pity to let you fuck them. As with any steampunk convention, a ringmaster of sorts steps into the Thunderdome to lay down the rules. The time has come for our king and queen to defend their title and see if they still got the juice to run this town. The rules are simple. First man to come gets to keep the name Mad Max. Runner-up probably gets eaten by the crowd. Who really gives a fuck? A lone voice in the crowd pipes up from outside the dome. Do the women have to come too? The crowd explodes in laughter. The ringmaster regains control of the crowd. There's no need for sorcery or superstition. See some weird shit. We know the rules. As soon as I walk out that gate, two men enter, one man leaks. And with that, he drops the mic and heads out the Thunderdome, the crowd chanting around him. Two men enter, one man leaks. Two men enter, one man leaks. With mattresses being a luxury now, the two couples were each given a pair of standard-issue dystopian future rusty barrels as their bang beds. Both women propped themselves up on their respective ram stands and set about peeling off their leather underwear. Mel and Tom, though wearing identical black leather pants, had very different experiences removing them. Mel struggled to unroll his trousers, while Tom used brute strength to peel his off. Already fully aroused because of his inhuman testosterone levels, Hardy started plowing away at the first thing his diamond hard dong could find, entirely missing Theron's box, but really giving it to that hole in the metal barrel. now thoroughly frustrated, had finally gotten enough of his 80s butt rock pants off to reveal a less than lethal weapon. An unsympathetic Tina Turner did not look surprised. What are you looking at, sugar tits? Help me out here. Bracing herself for the taste of mummified bologna sautéed in mud, Auntie grimaced as she took this gringo's go-gurt shooter into her mouth. Much like her music, her blowjob skills were less than amazing. But they were exactly the type of skills that got the mass of idiots outside the cage worked up. And when the audience gets worked up, Mel gets worked up. Back on Team Robo-Hulk, Charlie had decided to let Hardy know he was probably fucking a barrel. Charlie tapped Tom's shoulder and pointed at her nearly translucent alien vagina. Hardy nodded and went to work on that with the same mindless jackhammering he had the barrel. It was all the same to him. See, after years of fighting, Hardy couldn't really feel anything. Dead nerves are great if you're battling a guy dressed like a military-grade furry, but if you're in what amounts to a life-and-death circle jerk, more stuff's gonna have to happen. Stuff like butt stuff. That's right, folks. There's more than one way to skin a bobcat, and this way involved Charlie's robot fingers sliding down the crack in Hardy's granite ass cheeks. The touch of cold metal against his taut, scowling brown eye was actually a comfort to Hardy. It relaxed him. It meant it was time to bring it home. They caught each other's eyes, and he knew what she was asking, and he wanted it. Charlie's wasted no time going in, rooting around like a 14-year-old boy with his first girlfriend. Or like a 27-year-old man who hasn't learned anything new since he was 14. Hardy was an easy nut to crack, so to speak. Charlie had actually managed to hit the spot pretty early. And like a fucking idiot teenager, it caught Hardy by such great surprise that he forgot to pull out and lost his pearls in the vacant husk of a person that was Charlize Theron. Just like the saying, picture it didn't happen, in the Thunderdome they also had a saying, if you don't show the juice, then it ain't the truth. The old folks had already ran through what little life they had left in them in a matter of minutes, and at this point Mel was basically shoving a soggy hot dog bun into a sweaty t-shirt sleeve. Tina knew what had to be done. Like all narcissistic assholes, she knew he only came for that ass. She pushed him off, mumbling to herself, I'm getting too old for this shit. And turned and bent over on the barrel, mustered all the strength she had left in a sphincter whose structural integrity was questionable at best, and winked her sad old butthole at him, saying, drill it to me, Riggs! Like spinach to his Popeye of a penis, this was the boost Mel needed to get back in the game. The blood shot back into his old windsock cock so fast it actually made that ding sound that Popeye's muscles do right before they go beat up that vaguely ethnic guy. Her geriatric rectum that couldn't really keep anything in or out at this point, so Mel had no trouble sliding his little warrior into her dirt road. Tina thought she could taste it in the back of her throat, but it was actually just leftover dick cheese from earlier. Literally 14 seconds later, he pulled out and shot some extensively dehydrated cum all over her glistening brown back, so like jizz stars on a sweaty cocoa sky, everyone could see that he was the winner. Unable to prove their cum, Charlize and Hardy were banished to Furry Road, a 1,000-mile highway full of dudes in fox ears and raccoon tails trying to fuck you. Two men enter, one man leaks. Two men enter, one man leaks.
AJ Marquez! I'm here. And keep it going for Jesse Priest. Clap your hands for Jesse Priest.
This story is called Materia Girl, or Even Karate Girls Get the Blues. In the months since Seth Ross' defeat at the hand of Avalanche, an eco-terrorist group that would have never been the protagonist of a multi-million selling anything during the Reagan years, the common folk knew little to nothing of what was at stake. The fate of the world, the fate of friendships, of lovers. Why even this author is unaware of what's at stake if his girlfriend, who's never listened to a podcast, let alone has any idea what competitive erotic fan fiction is, someone who's never played a role-playing game in their entire life were to find this writing, the consequences could be dire. She could conjure the ultimate magic of restraining order or use the lesser magic of phone call to her mother. With the city of Midgar in shambles,
the denizens left to just outside the city's concrete jungles and into the desert, simply accepting that their lives would never be the same without the planet's life source being harvested to enjoy the modern convenience of something so simple as a light switch. They tried to move on the best they could, Tifa reopening her Sector 7 bar, 7th Heaven, but struggled to find business as fans of the television sitcom sharing the same name would leave in disgust upon finding out that there was no Toothless Ruthie, and instead got Marlene, 8 years old and recently orphaned. Marlene was the worst at conversation, saying nothing but, "Welcome to 7th Heaven, what can I get you?" No matter what you said to her. While never actually bringing anyone a drink, the Yelp reviews were terrible. To further compound Barrett and Tifa's financial woes, heavily armed adventurers would randomly let themselves in the apartments upstairs any time of day or night and help themselves to anything they could find as long as it was inside of a treasure chest. Nobody ever said a word or lifted a finger because apparently treasure chests in private residences are the same as free boxes on the streets of Portland. Barrett was a bouncer at the quaint little bar known as 7th Heaven and had problems keeping the peace, despite his entire right arm being a Gatling gun. In the months since the fall of Shinra, the giant corporate mega conglomerate that looked like Blackwater, Monsanto, and Comcast all rolled into one, Barrett had been stricken with a sense of guilt. Guilt for not having saved his adopted daughter Marlene's parents. Guilt for having Marlene work as a bartender at age 4 while he was off committing acts of eco-terrorism. And most of all, guilt for had not gotten sex toys attached to his gun arm. Regardless, Tifa had grown cold towards both Barrett and Cloud, who seemed like they would never conquer their personal demons despite having a shot at a really intelligent girl who could kick their ass. It's not that they aren't masculine and sexy, Tifa thought to herself, but closure and the ability to move on is way more attractive than muscles. Barrett fell asleep at the table in the corner, as it was a quiet Monday night. The stand-up comedy open mic just wasn't bringing in enough people, so she closed the bar early. And right as she finally sent out the last customer, Yuffie came inside 7th Heaven. "Today is my 18th birthday," exclaimed Yuffie. "Really, Yuffie?" asked Tifa skeptically. "Yeah, so what'd you get me?" "All teenagers are liars, Yuffie. So please go to the store, fetch me some cigarettes, Plan B, one step, a can of Skull, a lighter, a pack of rolling papers, lottery tickets, a pot leaf, a Jerky Boy CD, the latest issue of Soldier of Fortune magazine, and a copy of Showgirls on Laserdisc. Then I will believe you. Oh, and take Marlene with you and get her some ice cream. You like ice cream, right, Marlene?" "Welcome to 7th Heaven, what can I get you?" replied Marlene. Tifa and Yuffie exchanged a glance that seemed to say, "Yeah, if we didn't live in a post-apocalyptic wasteland, I'd totally take her to see a specialist." Tifa proceeded to get drunk off of the wine in her bar, drunk enough to ignore the repression of her sexuality so prevalent in her culture, and besides, Tifa finally had some private time. After their adventures, the hippie Al-Qaeda known as Avalanche had amassed quite the collection of materia, the Earth's pure life force concentrated into a solid. While most gave you great powers, others had different abilities. She had used the materia for sexual purposes before, each time telling herself that this would be the last time, that she had a code of honor to uphold, and using what was left of Gaia's live stream to get her rocks off was unethical. But yet she found herself using the fire materia to warm up her vibrator. She used the ice materia to cool it down. She used the slow materia on Cloud because he was a premature ejaculator. And the size materia because, well, you know. She used the fast materia on Barrett because she just wanted it to fucking end. She used the sleep and life materia to explore the darker side of her sexual fantasies. And used the confused materia simply as a dildo because it was shaped like a penis. But the guilt in her was too much. She could not continue to use the materia for sexual pleasures. She thought to herself, this will be my final fantasy. 7. Laid out before Tifa was 3 glowing shards. Summon materia, the kind containing the power to summon gods, demigods, demons, hideous monsters, and stuffed animal-looking things called mogs that rode in on giant birds. Tifa thought to herself, I will never find anyone in this world. I'll call someone using my summon materia to sexually gratify me and place the materia for Shiva and two others in her crotchless underwear armor she made to let her shit breathe while she was exploring any volcano dungeons. She used her first summons to call Shiva, having never paid attention when the summons were done on the account of them taking forever. Tifa expected an omniscient yogi who lives an ascetic life on Mount Kalish, as well as the householder with wife Pavardi and his two children. Or at least that's what Wikipedia had led her to believe. Instead, Tifa found an ice goddess standing before her at a battle-ready pose, already conjuring an ice spell when she realized there was no target. Cloud, is that you again? You can't just conjure me every time you want to get clayed, claiming you just want to talk and cuddle. Wait, you aren't Cloud. But sometimes he borrows your clothes. I didn't think this through, thought Tifa to herself, realizing that Shiva was a woman. And even if Tifa was into women, she would have to talk whoever she summoned into sleeping with her. Something that Cloud had clearly previously failed at. Tifa removed the summon materia from her armor, and Shiva was gone in a heartbeat. Tifa then used the Odin materia to call Odin forth, and as he came galloping in, saw no enemy to slay. He then dismounted his horse and walked to Tifa. Tifa began to strip her clothing off, deciding the direct approach would work best. Take me to Valhalla, Tiffany gasped. Tifa gasped, as Odin placed a firm grasp on Tifa's butt cheek. Odin went in for the kiss as Tifa sighed the relief that only someone sexually frustrated lets out as they realize they are for sure about to get laid. The smell of wine on her breath caused Odin to lose his erection. Have you been drinking? Odin asked. What does it matter? Come here and fuck me to the immigrant song. I'll even let you take the western shores. No, if you've been drinking, then you aren't really able to give consent. With you, but you're going to have to summon me when you are sober. Let's just go to Muchas Gracias and get ordered burritos. Tifa unhooked the Odin materia and was gone in a flash. Tifa had one last chance. She used her last summons to call up the Knights of the Round, 13 warriors of Arthurian legend, muscle-bound killing machines of pure masculinity. Tifa was certain that these testosterone-fueled beings of pure male would be game, and with nothing but the crotchless panties with the summoned materia, lie in wait. The first of the 13 came looking confused as Tifa walked to him, removing his helmet, kissing him, and raising his hands to pull his armor off. Knight number two approached and seemed to instantly know what was going on and began to remove his armor as he came upon Tifa. And the first knight removed the second knight removed the first knight's greaves, or leg armor for you lathemen. Knight number two began to fillet knight number one, and knight number one closed his eyes and pushed Tifa away as knight number three approached knight number two and removed knight number two's greaves and began filleting knight number two. Four did the same to three, five to four, and so on in the way numbers go, in which I am not taking the time to say. Tifa realized that the Knights of the Round Table had a very fabulous closet in their castle. Tifa was mesmerized. Being rejected by angsty 20-somethings that poorly handled the gender dysphoria was handled easily enough, but Tifa had just thrown her nude body at 14 men only to be cast aside. Tifa realized that they were just doing what was natural to men cooped up in close quarters with no women. She watched as warriors boosted morale, showed each other the true definition of loyalty, honor, and respect.
Jesse Priest. And your final round one competitor, Sean Jordan. Let him hear it. Hey, welcome to the group. My name's Sean. I'll be running a little meeting today. First up, I want to thank everybody for showing up. It's a big hurdle right there, all right? It's a big hurdle. You got to get out in the world. Got to live your life knowing that she is out there every day living her life. And this meeting, it's not about her. If you want to talk, it doesn't have to be about her. You can just talk about anything on your mind. You can talk about what's going on in the day. You can just talk about life. I don't care at all. I'm going to go ahead and start. My name's Sean Jordan, and I am a former lover of Carmen Electra. Not in a physical sense or anything like that. More in like a middle school, early high school type way. And it was basically just me just stroking down to her images on pretty much anything I could find. Internet wasn't really a real thing yet. It was mostly calendars, pictures, movie covers, things of that nature.
You know, I knew I hit rock bottom when I was in the upper lift shack at a ski lodge that I was working at. Saw some electrical tape on the wall. Reminded me of Electra, and you see where I'm going with this. I grabbed my bad dude, I just started tugging till my lover's pudding went all over the place. It was the lowest moment in my life until my shift was over. I grabbed my snowboard, cruised down the hill. I did a method air that was so flat you could have eaten dinner off it. That made me feel a lot better. My point is, she's a perfect late 90s, early 00s type woman, and none of us are to blame for anything we did. I'm slowly getting my life together. I drink liquor almost every night. I do whatever drugs I can get my hands on. And that's a good thing. My therapist says anything I need to do to take my mind off Carmen is what I should be doing. And here I am, just living my life one lay at a time. One lay at a time. Who would like to go next? Dave? See Dave? You out there, Dave? You want to go first? Hi, my name's Dave Navarro, and I'm a former lover of Carmen Electra. I met Carmen when she walked up to me in the lame leather and piercing store that I'm at all the goddamn time. She told me I had pouty lips and mysterious eyes, and that she liked how I looked like that Khal Drogo dude from Game of Thrones would look like in 15 years. I told her that's exactly what I was going for. I felt like she really got me, and then we had weird, mysterious, weird guy sex. I didn't want to do it at the all-leather, all-dork, all-the-time store because I'm a mysterious tool. I took us to an abandoned subway station. I tied a leather bandana around my right thigh and put a cigarette on my forehead before I entered her. I hummed nursery rhymes in reverse, and I cried happy tears. It was the best hate I've ever made. I don't make love like most people because I'm a creepy, weirdo loser. I make hate. Afterwards, I gave her my pager number and she never got at me. I went back to that leather store a few more times hoping to see her, but all I saw were the normal loser leather weirdos. We had our fun, and now I see that it was never meant to be. I'm dealing, though. I have a shitty goatee that makes me smile whenever I'm down. And that weird, shitty Ultra Dome tattoo reality show that I have gives me a little pocket change. I'm living. I'm living one lay at a time. Wait, thanks, Dave. You're brave. You're a brave man. Now that you got the ball rolling, who wants to go next? Fred? Fred, is that you in the back? You're among friends. Come talk. All right, fine. Hi, my name's Fred Durst, and I'm a former lover of Carmen Electra. I have no clue how a girl that attractive ever thought to let my stupid red hat, white tee wearing dumb dick inside her. I'm so lame, I was left off the list of former lovers that Sean looked up on the internet. God, I'm such a worthless choke. I was metal rapping to myself at a Sony PlayStation after party for the release of one of the new Tony Hawk Pro Skater games when I was electrified. She approached me and told me how shitty and stupid my music was, and that I was a dork who had no business being in the spotlight for anything other than a top 10 worst songs of all time by the same band list. She told me my guitarist was the only talent in my rap metal group, and I agreed. So did my boner. She said she wanted to bone me because I was famous for some fucking reason, and that I was toast down with that. If I wasn't famous, I would never get any stank on my hang down. We had sex. Stank on my hang down. Yeah. We had sex, and I said thank you a record number of times. I was crying pretty hard most of the time, but when I wasn't crying, I was thanking the god of metal rap that an angel would grace my weird back music-making penis with her warm rock. After we had sex, I took off my red condom that had a white tee painted on it and a red Yankee. A big red Yankee Y on the side of it. I went to put it in my scrapbook that I carry with me everywhere. I found a spot right next to some VMA that I got. It was the only award my band had ever got. I poured out my stupid cum and I folded it in my scrapbook, tucked it in nice and neat. When I looked up, Carmen was making fun of me with some of her friends that she had called to come watch this pathetic affair. She was out to make fun of me the whole time. Then I realized, of course, what was actually happening. Our tryst was just a sick joke to her and the new power generation. I suck at music and everything else. Richard Marx has more talent in his eyebrows than I do in my whole cum body. I'm living, though. I got a new side metal band project with ICP. It's going to really blow, and I can't wait to start making shitty, horrible, dumb fucking music again and talking to girls that I would never, ever get a chance to. I'm living. One lay at a time. Wait, thanks, Fred, for being so brave. You know, we all hate your guts so hard. Nobody knows what you're doing here, man. You should just get out. Let's keep going, though. Who wants to be next? Dennis? Hey, everybody. My name's Dennis Rodman, and I'm a former lover of Carmen Electra. I was an amazing basketball player for quite some time, and it made perfect sense that Carmen would want to date me. I'm a tall, rich, and famous athlete with a giant smoking hog. Who wouldn't want to date that? Honestly, I don't know how anybody ever dated Carmen after me. I imagine it was a lot like dropping a straw down an open manhole after I got done dating her. Carmen's pretty buck, though, and I don't really have any hard feelings. I just came here because I heard Prince was here, and he's the fucking man. My life is fine. She didn't mess it up too hard. Just staying alive, using every hair dye I can get my hands on. I'm living, one lay at a time. All right, Dennis, that was amazing. You're such a fucking man. I'd like an autograph after the show. We can all beat the shit out of Fred together. And everybody hates his guts so much. Who wants to go next? Hey, my name's Tommy Lee, and I have herpes. Tommy, it's not that group, man. Oh. Well, I still got him. I wish the cure was that easy. My name's Tommy Lee, and I'm a former lover of Carmen Electra. I do have herpes, just so we're all clear on that. I know it doesn't have anything to do with this, but it's really been pissing me off lately. I met Carmen when I was on tour with the second shittiest rap metal band of all time, Methods of Mayhem. Yeah, I said second. I'm looking right at you, Fred. Fuck off. I was getting one of my shitty tattoos. Which shitty tattoo was it? Was it the shitty tattoo that said Mayhem across my stomach? No, it was. It might have been that shitty, weird genie lamp looking tattoo on my stomach underneath the shitty Mayhem tattoo. Maybe it was the creepy skeleton dude on my leg that looks like he's riding my thigh. I don't know. Either way, it was just a shitty tattoo that I was getting. Carmen was in there with some dude who wasn't famous and thought I was like, fuck that. Hey, Tommy, you're mad famous, dude. She probably saw that Methods of Mayhem video where your dick was the size of a remote control and is actually pretty reasonable. Most people lost their mind over it for some reason. You Tommy fucking Lee, bro. And I spelled bro B-R-E-A-U-X. Went over to her and there was an instant spark. We talked about dumb, stupid things like all our favorite John Grisham novels and what color leather poncho looks the best on me, and made hot person love, which we all know is boring and arrogant. It was the best handful of minutes I ever knew. It lasted for a week or so. Then Carmen had a breakthrough role in a scary movie. I couldn't handle that actress. I couldn't handle the stress. It's hard for a washed-up rock star like myself to deal with something like that. But I'm good now. I found some soup can who thinks the world of me still. Doesn't mind that Salisbury steak is my favorite food. And I'm living. I'm living one lay at a time. Well, thanks, Tommy. Anybody else? I think we just have one more person that wants to share. Anybody else? The last person? Hey, what's up? I'm Prince. I'm a former lover. I'm not a former lover of Carmen Electra. She's a former lover of mine. She's probably in the Prince support group right now. I make love to anything and everything with a heartbeat. And she happened to be in the big old pudding of cock stew that was in my opium den of a living room that night. I come purple and it always makes an outline of the Minneapolis skyline on the stomach of whatever living thing I happen to be blessing at the moment. I'm not bummed at all. I was just actually going to invite every one of you back to my house for a gnarly bone fest to get drippy. One lay at a time or eight lays at once. You tell me. Prince, 5,000.
Sean Jordan. Let's get everybody from round one back up. Sean, I like how you almost did a voice for like three words when you got to Prince.
Thought about doing Fred Durst. I was going to do it like this.
Round one, everybody back up. Walk your asses up here, round one. Clap your hands for everybody from round one. One, two. We have two. Awesome direction following so far. If you read a piece tonight in round one, get your ass up on stage so we can judge you. Jesus fucking Christ. All over the country I do this show. Never had this much trouble with comedians following directions. There's AJ. You're AJ. And we're looking for Jesse Priest. Jesse Priest. Anybody? All right. Well, fuck it. Here's what's going to happen. You guys are going to vote with your applause on who's your favorite. First, I'm just going to remind you of what everybody read. No voting yet. We started with Bentley Michaels with The Expendables. Then we had AJ Marquez with Mad Max. Jesse Priest with what? I don't know what that was. What was that? Final Fantasy thing. I'm not a fucking nerd. And finally, Sean Jordan with the Carmen Electra support group. That was Jesse. All right, so pick a favorite, starting with Bentley Michaels with The Expendables. AJ Marquez, Mad Max. Jesse Priest, Final Fantasy. And Sean Jordan, Carmen Electra Support Group. That's Jesse Priest with Final Fantasy, ladies and gentlemen. Mr. Jesse Priest. All the comics you saw in round one, clap your hands. Thanks, fellas. Great job.
That does it for round one. To hear round two, you can download episode 139 right now. And if you like what you heard, please subscribe and rate us on iTunes. For details on upcoming shows, you can follow me on Twitter at Brian Cooking or the show at CE Fanfic. See you next time.
Now leaving Nerdist.com.